previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
I didn't expect to find myself living in the future, but here I fucking well am.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 133 for the week of October 24th, 2016. I am Pig in a Poke, David T. Cole, and I'm here with B-Bot Sarah D. Bunting.
Hashtag death to reasons.
Prime user Tara Ariano.
Minimum requirement 3.8.
And place on Earth, Daniel McEachern.
Ooh, baby, do you know what that's worth?
Welcome back to an episode of Extra Hot Great. We hope does not blow up, touching wood with both hands. Thank you for your patience this week. If you are not caught up to all of our minis that we dropped last week, there's a very exciting update coming for you in game time. So stand by. And welcoming back to the show, our guest this week, Daniel McEachern. Hello, Danny.
Hi.
Hello.
Yay! Danny was on the show previously when he was visiting us here at Ford Awesome in Hawaii, but that was a week that Sarah was off at the baseball conference, right? That's what you were doing that week?
I think so, yes.
So this
That's
is
right,
your,
you weren't on.
Your first time sharing the microphones in your separate cities. So we're very happy to have you here, Danny, for our discussion. Fittingly enough, our last episode before Halloween this year, which is on Netflix's third season of Black Mirror, which just dropped on Friday. So we're going to be talking about probably all of the episodes, all six, because we have a quorum of people who have watched all six of them. So shall we begin with number one, Nosedive?
Sure. This was, I think, the hard lesson for Tara episode.
Explain.
Karma for people that are mean on social media.
Who am I mean to on social media other than Neve Shulman and Deborah Messing?
I was just going to say Deborah Messing.
Yeah, but they're like the five-star power players of the universe, so they could really do you some damage. Guys, let's just all be good to each other. The episode. But it would, before we get into that part, I just wanted to say, Tara, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much did you want to live in the shitty, in quotes, monochromatic neighborhood that they lived in at the start of the episode, where all the homes are sort of like white and mother of pearl and everything inside was white and gray?
Oh, I was all about it. Yeah. I thought that looked great.
I know.
I had no problem. Catnip. It was all pastel. Everyone was definitely coordinated with one another. It was very pleasing to the eye, for sure. That is not what our correspondent Lisa Schmeiser said about it, of course. And I actually agree with her point, too. She had a great post on Friday about Nosedive, which was saying that it was the antidote to Pinterest sameness in design, which I thought was a very good point. Sarah, you especially liked her line about boots and leaves. I can't remember exactly what it was.
Yeah, that it was like wearing a artfully off-the-shoulder shaker knit sweater while standing in a pile of leaves, or like taking a picture of your boots in a pile of leaves. And I was like, that's pretty much half my Instagram. I also may have photographed ivy leaves on my own deck for Instagram. I get it. I'm part of the problem.
So first, Dan, you're our guest. So let's give you the first crack at Nosedive. What did you think?
I thought it looked really great, but it took an hour to say something that I think was accomplished in the first 5 minutes, and he knew where it was going to go. So I found myself a little bit disappointed with that episode. I don't know. What did everybody else think?
I don't disagree. A few months ago, exited Twitter, like maybe, I don't know, half a year ago or something like that or so.
The sad day.
And and I just like the artifice of it and everything about it. I was just like, I could do without it. And then for reasons which I won't bore you with, I came back a few weeks ago just because I have to deal with Twitter for some other stuff.
Also a sad day. Just kidding.
for us.
But there is a certain big chunk of Twitter that exists for its own sake. You know, there are people that I know on Twitter who are not the same people I know in real life. You know, like their Twitter personality is quite different from their real the real personality. And I thought it captured that part of it, you know, like this weird gamesmanship of social media. But Dan, I totally agree with you. It said what it needed to say in 10 minutes, not and didn't need the whole hour. Although I will say I thoroughly enjoyed the last minute of this episode where yeah. she meets the other person that just had enough of everything and they just scream at each other for a minute. I thought that was,
yeah,
that was,
I also liked, I don't know if any of you guys are Happy Valley watchers.
No,
but the guy who played her brother, I mean, his American accent was horrible and he was not even trying. But this guy was like a big bad guy on Happy Valley, like a disgusting, manipulative bad guy. But then he was really quite charming in this role. I really enjoyed that. But I also agree there were a few sequences that it was like, this could have been done in 41 minutes, 45 minutes, like her rant at the wedding, like,
yeah, get on with
this
it.
This is your climax. I shouldn't be checking my watch.
Yeah.
Her time on the bus going to the convention when she was trying to pretend that she was into the same television show that everybody else won, or everybody else was into, was really funny. I thought she was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Bryce Dallas Howard, I thought she was great. And I agreed with a lot of the points that the episode made. I just found myself checking my watch by the end of it.
Yeah, and I want to see the application in the world that can succeed with that brown salmon color as their main color. I don't think so. I think it was supposed to be like rose gold or something, but it really kind of looked like old salmon to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, come on, guys.
Dave Cole design cop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Episode two.
Yes. All episode right. two was
playtest.
Yes. This was the one that Omar Gayaga wrote up for us on previously.tv with a post that I thought was also excellent, outlining the plausibility of the video game elements that were on display in the episode. I thought was really smart. And of course, he's a tech writer. This is why we assigned it to him. And that was, I wasn't thinking he would do exactly that, but I'm glad that he did, because it was really interesting to like see where the through line is from the elements of the episode into what is actually possible and currently available in real life. But Dave, this was the one I thought you would be most interested in, since you are a video game fellow.
Yeah. I did enjoy this one quite a bit. I liked how they kind of eased you into, you know, the virtual world from near future to far future, you know, starting with the whack-a-mole and then, you know, going into the full century game. The premise of this episode is that there is a Japanese company that is sort of building a neural net version of a VR, you know, one that actually goes right into your brain, one that sort of jacks you into the matrix instead of just putting goggles in front of your eyeballs. I think that that company would probably be more of like a porn company that would actually make, like, you know, like, you know, the old conceit that porn moves technology, you know, like porn decided the DVD debate or the VHS versus Betamax debate. It decided the Blu-ray versus HD DVD debate, you know, like they're the ones that move technology.
They got us all like bandwidth, like big bandwidth at home.
And to take online payments.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I kind of thought that that wasn't mentioned at all seemed a little, you know, like that could have, it didn't need to be about porn, but I kind of figured like that would have been like a throwaway line that, you know, they got to talk to whatever red tube or whatever, you know, something like that.
I don't know. I think that combo spider that was like the body of it was obviously a giant ball sack was very porny. You know, someone wants to have sex with that thing.
Yeah.
Perverts.
Jeez.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Not really.
The Inception-esque twist of this episode really was a gut punch, you know, where kind of waking from a nightmare into like a worse one was a nice little twist. Usually on Black Mirror, you know, I take a guess 10 minutes in exactly what's going on, and then I have to take another guess 35 minutes in. And this one was like that, whereas Nosedive, you know, you kind of saw it all coming, and then maybe Men Against Fire, you saw what was coming.
Yes, sir.
After 10 seconds, you know. But this one, I enjoyed a lot. What did everybody else think?
I liked it a lot. I thought that actor was very likable. Mm-hmm. I thought that was half the battle. I did sort of wish, you know, that part in the painting where he's like, in the painting, the light is on and he sees someone and then it's off. I liked that reference to, there's a Stephen King story called The Road Virus Heads North, which is basically about this guy buys a painting in a yard sale of this like vampire driving a convertible.
Yeah.
And then it's like following him to his home. Yeah. And then like, even if you know what's going to happen, I've reread the story many times and it's like King in his absolute like weird best and he keeps it short. So it's great. That might have been a Bachman story. I sort of wish they had done more with that. And there was a little bit of slow time in the middle, like when he's sort of like that guy is just standing there and he's like sweeping his hand through the image. It was like, okay, like let's get to the part where it goes off the rails.
Well, yeah, especially since you can tell when you look at the guy too that there were some shots where it was just a still and some where there was an actual live person being there alive. Like you could tell he was like imperceptibly moving. So I was waiting for something to happen with that, but maybe also that was the point of this, the suspense of it. Yeah, I thought it was all right. It was not really for my favorite of the season, I would say.
But yeah, I didn't see it. Here's what I think.
I did like the part where they were sharpening the actual mole in the whack-a-mole part, like an eye test, where it was like first he was all sort of 8-bit and then sharper and then even sharper, and how delighted he was at like, obviously this was like the pre-mini game of the real game. And that, anyway, that sometimes it's the dopiest stuff that is the most enjoyable, even in the video game world. That was cute. Moving on to episode 3, which was Shut Up and Dance.
Yeah. So this is the doing it for the lulz blackmail episode.
Yeah. This is a creeper.
This reminded me of an episode of Luther. There was an episode of Luther. Not so much like exactly the content, but the tone. There was an episode of Luther where there's two brothers that are serial killers and they're competing with each other. And they're sort of gamifying the art of killing where they like roll dice and they have a system on who they kill gives them a certain amount of points and then they level up, you know, sort of like this making a game out of killing random people in different places. And this sort of had that same sort of like just super dark, way too overthought killing machine tone to it. Do you remember that episode?
Kind of.
There was the big scene was him rolling dice in the underground.
Oh,
just before he's killing
people,
he's got like, you know, the Dungeons and Dragons dice, you know, and he's doing that. This sort of reminded me of that very Baroque system of getting people to kill each other.
Yeah.
It was sort of like Anonymous meets the dark web kind of thing. It was like straightforward in its mechanics, but it was really well put together. I found it really tense throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't the Twilight Zone style of Black Mirror. It was the telling a story that could happen with technology if somebody really put a lot of thought.
That feels like it could happen right now.
Yes.
Like it doesn't feel like it's happening in the near future. I won't say more about the what happens at the very end because Danny hasn't watched this one yet. Mm-hmm. But
I'm not a spoiler baby.
You can take his headphones off.
I can say it without giving away the ending, but I will say that the reveal about the main guy Kenny made a lot more sense of what came before it, because I spent a lot of it being like, really, like this is what he's so worried about, and then it's like, oh okay, yep. I get it now. That yes, you would be worried about that. And this one also featured Sarah's favorite guy from Ripper Street, so I'm curious to know what she thought of this one.
I liked it. I'm always sort of amazed by how many references there continue to be in the culture to The Most Dangerous Game.
Yeah.
Which is basically, yeah, in case you're not familiar, the Zodiac killer, like the actual one, not just the movie, referenced this story explicitly, but it's like a guy rescuing travelers and then turning them loose on his island estate to hunt them for sport. And that kind of, like, obviously this isn't an exact analog, but that kind of story and the idea of just like someone unseen fucking with you, not even for vengeance, but just cause, like that keeps coming up.
Yep.
It was weird to see Flinzy like with short modern hair and being kind of a pussy. Wasn't super into that, but I don't know. I like him, so it's always enjoyable.
Yeah. He's also on repeat.
This one seemed at the time to be taking a like kind of a long time to to get where it was going, but then the payoff totally made it worth it, and the way it was shot I thought was really good. And this was the one that sucked in Dan, my husband Dan, mm-hmm. was like, oh, it took his headphones out and was like, what is this show?
This one,
like,
also.
Oh, look at you caring about what I watch.
I know there's something about the rhythm of this episode that I enjoyed. It's just like, you know, like it was just like a you know, if it was a video game, it would be like world 1-1, world 1-2, yeah. world 1-3, you know, yeah. and it sort of had this progression to it where it's like things get slightly crazier, or, you know, you see the character, you get to see Max for a moment from Humans.
Yeah, heard of him.
He has
and there was a black humor to the timing of it that they'd yeah. be like, well, why don't we just try to get around it with X, and then they'd both get a text that was like, nope.
yeah it had a really good build, I thought, and yes, as you said, the payoff at the end made it worthwhile. I was also glad they brought back the lady with the car at the end too, so we can see what her,
you know,
thing is.
but Black Mirror now being a Netflix show where you binge six of them at a time, there's value into, like, not all of them are this M. Night Shyamalan, you know, here's the thing at the end
that makes,
you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
the 90% of the episode before the little thing, the button at the end, is watchable in its own right. Right. Yep. There's a certain interest in going to 1-1, 1-2, 1-3.
Yep.
Whereas, you know, you watch The Village or something like that, and you're like, well, okay, well, it's just like, I'm going to get some popcorn, go to the washroom, I'll come back when the truck driver comes here. You know, like that's, yeah. You don't get that sense.
I do also think that they did a good job in the whole season of, like, how they mixed up the stories. Like, the ordering felt like it made sense, like that you get a relief in the middle. So we should move on to number four, I guess.
Okay.
In San Junipero, oh, which was the sweetest episode of the season. Oh, my God. It took a while for me to figure out what was happening because I'm not very smart. But this is the one. I feel like, based on what people are saying on Twitter, this is everyone's favorite episode of the season.
It seems to be.
Yeah, this happened.
Go ahead.
It happened to be the first one that I watched. This was my first experience with Black Mirror overall. All I know about Black Mirror is what I've learned from Extra Hot Great. This was the first episode that I watched, and it was really, really good. Like you said, I had some sort of idea what was happening, but the fact that you weren't entirely sure, they parceled it out nicely, made for a really compelling, watchable episode that I wanted to watch to the end. I thought it was really well done.
I maybe somebody out there had the same notion at the start, but I turned to Tara with like 2 minutes into it, and, you know, she's in that Miami-esque strip, Tucker's, the bar, the dance club. And I said to her, is this like all take place in like a Grand Theft Auto type of world? Because I knew it was like a little off kilter, but it seemed like Vice City. It was like one of
It did look like Vice City.
Yeah. I was kind of a little bit right. But, you know, this episode is about the singularity.
Yeah.
It's about basically downloading you as a entity into a virtual world after your body gives up. Number one, no thank you. Sometimes I think this life is long enough. Thank you very much.
Agree.
What are the economics of surviving in the singularity? Like, you know, you live your life in singularity, and that's all just ones and zeros, so that could be anything you want, and they've built a world that people enjoy and they're subscribed to it, but like somebody's still got to pay for that. Right? So, like, you know, you have to like spend your life setting up trusts and investments so that when you die, you. But no, I mean, like, think about
that's definitely the point of this episode.
I'm not saying it's the point of the episode. I'm saying this is what it made me think of. So
I stand with Dave.
Okay, let's just say, for sake of argument, you're that lady, right? You're Cameron from Halt and Catch Fire.
Sure.
You just died.
Yeah.
In the real world, and now you're in the singularity. And your bank account has $1 million in it. And it costs $80,000 a year for you to be in the singularity. They're not doing it for free.
Hang on, I'm working this out. $80,000 a year.
I don't know why it would cost that much either. Like, how much does it cost to run our forums a month? It feels like it should be the same.
Because when you're charging people to live forever, you name the price. That's why. It's not a commodity. It's.
I guess, but then
once it's too high, no one will do it. So then the price drops because you're just ones and zeros. And what are you ever paying for?
All right, whatever the price is. Whatever the price is. there's a finite amount of money that you can generate, unless you're the ultra rich, unless all these, like, these characters could have been like,
right,
you know,
at which time you're just shut off and you don't know the fucking difference.
That's what
like
I was
getting
gonna
hit
say
by a bus.
Yes,
well,
like,
you don't
when
know
when, yeah, your money runs out, you just blink off and then you don't know the difference. That's the end of your consciousness.
Yeah, but you know the difference. You know that's going to happen when you're alive. So I'm just saying, if you buy into the singularity, mm-hmm, like some of my friends do, they're not listening, but you're crazy. but if you do, then you know when you're living that it's not really forever. And I think, like, are people going to be living in this life just to extend, you know, this virtual paradise life? It's just,
I
mean, this is an interesting.
I can't imagine... First of all, I don't think this really differs from any belief system about the afterlife, to wit.
Yeah.
It can't hurt to believe in it, because if it there's nothing afterwards, you won't fucking know the difference either way, so who cares? Yeah. But it's kind of like, I don't know. This actually, the visual of like the robotic arm putting their like jump drives into the wall,
yeah,
put me in mind of the columbarium at Greenwood Cemetery, which is, yeah, right near my house, and just like the walls of and like the little flower vases that are there, and like that occasionally there are family members there like reading the paper to their dead loved ones. Aww. Just like, oh, well, why not? I don't think spirits stay around the burial or interment site, but who's it hurting to go and read OG to Papa? Who cares? Why not?
Yeah.
So it's like, but on that same tip, I've been told by cemetery staff, like, perpetual care, total scam.
Yeah.
If you don't go and make sure they're mowing around Noonie and Farfar, it's not happening. And even if you go and check, it's probably not happening. Yeah. But my feeling is like, I don't know, you have this probably one-time charge to go be plugged into the grid. And then whatever happens to you after that, you're not going to know.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the important part of the story is when, oh God, now I can't remember her name. The Kelly, right? Is that the Gugu Mbatha Raw,
yes,
character? Okay. When she's explaining why she doesn't want to live her eternity in San Junipero, and it's out of loyalty to her husband and her daughter who died young. That's like, that was really striking to me. And the fact that, you know, and then the journey of her story is, of course, that she decides, okay, he wouldn't mind if I found love again. And that was, you know, it's okay if I give this to myself as a gift for my afterlife. And then, you know, seeing them drive away in their wedding dresses, like, I cried so much. It's so emotional.
Oh God, me too. And you know who doesn't, you know, who doesn't respond to it that way? Straight guys. Whose names start with D, just in my limited experience.
We've only heard from one. Danny, what did you think of this episode?
I said off the top that I really liked it, but I would like to point out that I hope that instead of $80,000 a month, that it's 80,000 credits.
Yes, true.
That is my one criterion for a near future sci-fi sort of show, and that's it's didn't come up, and I thought the episode was poorer for it.
Yeah.
Over to you, Dave.
This was also directed by the same guy who did Be Right Back, the season 2 episode with Donald Gleason and Haley Atwell, which is similarly very emotional and very sad. So if you liked San Junipero and are not caught up on seasons 1 and 2 of Black Mirror, I would recommend going back, at least watching that one, but maybe before watching season 1, episode 1, which is very, very different from this.
I want to know what happened to the video game guy in this episode.
The video game guy.
The guy
that was kept hitting on Yorkie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Poor that guy. Wrong tree.
And also,
up.
How many of you knew that there was a Space Invaders Part 2 video game?
I didn't.
I did.
Yeah, me too.
It was nice. Right. It was nice to see it again. I cried when I saw it.
I sit corrected.
All right, moving on to episode 5. This is the one that our very own Danny will be writing up for previously.tv. So why don't you tell us your reactions to this one? It was called Man Against Fire.
Okay, Man Against Fire. I liked it. Dave alluded to it earlier in terms of guessing early on what the twist of an episode is going to be, if there's going to be a twist.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Dave guessed this one. I imagine Sarah and Tara probably didn't have a whole lot of trouble with this either.
No, I didn't.
Of,
didn't get this
you,
one.
You
at
didn't
all.
Have any trouble, or you didn't get it?
No, no, I didn't get it. I thought this was a Zika story as opposed to what it turned out to be. But go ahead.
Yeah, it starts off, but by this point I'd watched a couple of episodes, so I sort of was getting the sense that there's going to be some sort of turn, some sort of pivot to bring the point home. But I really enjoyed watching it more than I enjoyed watching Nosedive. It's about a soldier who, you know, is part of this unit that is clearing out roaches. They look like mutants that are, you know, stealing food, killing people.
They're like a bunch of Voldemorts.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Their faces are all messed up. But then as the episode progresses, he's starting to see glitches. All these soldiers, they have these sort of, I don't know what you call them, like a heads-up display for their eyes where they can see building schematics, plans, that sort of thing.
They have implants.
Right in front.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as the episode progresses, he starts to see little glitches and stuff, and he goes to the doctor to try to find out what's wrong, and they can't figure out what's going wrong. They have an idea, which we don't really know until towards the end of the episode, and I thought even though I knew where it was going and what this twist was going to be, I thought the episode handled it really well, and it raised some interesting questions. I don't know how much we want to spoil this particular episode.
No, you can
episode.
Say. People, we said up top that we're going to give everything away, so people should know.
Well, it turns out that part of the implant that the soldiers get is a program that essentially makes people see, or makes them see, these mutants or these roaches. They're just normal people. But they are in a lower caste of society, and the army is exterminating them. And he has a choice of whether he can continue doing this or he can live with the unedited memories of the times that he has killed roaches, and it proves to be too much for him. And I thought the episode was, I liked it much better than Nosedive, even though I found it even more, just as predictable as Nosedive was.
This is basically an extended take on Joey Pants' decision from The Matrix, whether he wants to go back in. I know the steak isn't real, but I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, and
steak
and,
is pretty good. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I thought this was the weakest of the six, just because I felt, you know, it was telegraphed, and beyond that, it was just sort of like a near future, slight dystopian take on things. I did really enjoy Doug Stamper's turn here.
He's the
best.
Really,
that's right.
Man, that man is menacing.
He is. He's so good.
Jesus. This gives me the creeps every time.
And with his glasses,
as soon as
too.
As soon as he shows up trying to reassure the protagonist, I forget his name. You know that Doug's... Strike.
Strike.
Oh, stripe or Strike?
Yeah.
One of those.
I think it's Stripe.
Okay.
As soon as he shows up to reassure Stripe/Strike what's going on, you know that he's lying, and you know that something very bad is happening.
For
that's
sure.
True. Him and his doppelganger, kind of like his old, slightly older version, that guy with a name I can't pronounce, who's...
Zhelko Ivan.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Ivanek. Yes.
Like, they could basically play each other's parts.
And their father, Truxton Spangler from Rubicon.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. A reminder once again that TV produced a character whose name was Truxton Spangler.
I like that you made the analogy to Nosedive, because to me these were both obviously very different subject matter, but both similarly didactic. I thought that, you know, we get it. Let's be nice to refugees. Like, okay, check. Sarah, what
I find myself enjoying.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, Danny.
I was just gonna say, like I was saying before, I this is my first experience with Black Mirror, but it reminds me of how much I have enjoyed anthology series in the past, like from the 80s. And I'm like even Twilight Zone, and my first experience with Twilight Zone was the 80s reboot. I just like that idea of a new story coming along every 45 minutes that if you don't like one, and this was one that I predicted, but I thought, well, I'll check something else out. I liked it more than Dave.
Yeah.
I will say, like, I thought it was the weakest of the bunch, but I think season-wise, this is the strongest overall season. Like, in other seasons, there's been episodes where I was like, oh, boy. You know, like, that was not great. Like, you know how Sherlock, you know, it was always like, good, bad. And, like, but, like, the good ones were so good, you're like, yay, more Sherlock's coming. But then when you sit down, you have a moment of clarity. It's like, there's some clunkers here, you know?
Yeah, but, like, then even a bad Sherlock is still better than... Elementary,
and Black Mirror season 1 and 2 had some clunkers in the middle. Whereas this one, like, even though I didn't like Men Against Fire as much as the other ones, like, I enjoyed watching it. I just thought it was not as nuanced as other offerings in this season.
Sarah,
I was expecting it to be more, I don't know, sicker or something, because the only one I know is the one that you guys talked about where they make the guy have sex with the pig.
Yeah. There was really only one animal bestiality episode of Black Mirror, and that was it.
Once you've so done far. It, you kind of have to say that idea is burnt. Anyway, Sarah, what were your thoughts on this one?
I agree that it was the weakest of the season to me. But as we were just saying, like, a weak Black Mirror is still pretty good. And I still thought this was better. Like, I've been revisiting some season ones with Dan, who was like, oh, we're out of the season. I was like, good news, pig fucking. But we also watched 15 Million Credits, which was that, like, ooh, yeah, American Idol,
yep,
people, yep, exercycling to create power dystopia that he was like, oh. Mm-hmm.
Did you say credits?
Yep.
Yes, I did. You'll enjoy that one, at least during the title. But this one, like, I really felt like, again, like, I got it pretty early on. And then there is often in a Black Mirror that part where someone is explaining what's actually happening, like doing text position, which is fine, and often I need it. In this one, I did feel like Doug Stamper was kind of going on about it when we got it already. But then that last shot of Stripe just like looking at the boarded up house, and then it going back and forth between the like neural net plug-in fantasy that they've, it's just like, oh, you get a home visit, and it's just like a slum on a cloudy day, and there's no one there, or is there? Like, you think you see maybe a shadow, sort of like Sopranos dream sequence style at the top of the stairs, and then it's nothing. It's like a branch. Mm-hmm. And that was very affecting. So was this my least favorite of the season? Yes. Did it suck? No, not exactly. No, it was just a little slow.
Yeah.
Very good.
All right, moving on to the finale, as Dave called, this was hated in the nation, or as Dave called it,
Luther with robot bees.
Future Luther.
Yeah, no, and that's not a knock on it.
No.
Like, I thought this, like, it really just felt like a really good UK procedural show that happened to have this Internet of Things menace quality to it. You know, Luther got kind of bananas. Like, this could, like, be basically, you know, comic books do near future series like Spider-Man 2086 or whatever. Like, this could have been Luther 2030. And it would have been like, yeah, all right. You know, like, Luther's like 80, but he's still working cases because he's got cybernetics and stuff. This is basically that show. And this was their feature length episode.
Yep.
You know, it deals with privacy, deals with the Internet of Things, which is this new class of internet device, you know, like, that are just like kind of dumb terminals that do one or two things, like a light bulb that turns on, or home automation, or you know, something in your car that, you know, lets you talk to it, and things like that, you know, little devices. And also it's all about citizen surveillance, and it mixes it all up with Margaret from Boardwalk Empire as DCI. And
Lizzie from the Bletchley Circle.
Yay.
Oh, yeah. That's what she's... Oh, okay. Yeah.
So she gets to be a codebreaker again.
Yeah. And it was just... I thought this was like a really good procedural crime thing that happened to be about robot bees. Like, I don't think it had anything too profound to say, except, again, harking back to Nosedive. Be careful what you say in social media, guys.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that was like the weirdo, like, you know, crazy twist to it. Yeah. But if you peel it back.
And they weren't afraid to go ahead and do it either.
Yes.
Right. Wow. Things I like about the show that they're never like saved with 2 seconds left on the countdown clock. They're just like, nope.
Here's the warehouse.
Y'all gotta die.
Cough. I mean, this was the one where I thought you were going to say this was more for me, because when they were like death to whatever, I was like, let's hear him out. You know, like, sometimes a good idea is a good idea. Just kidding. This is the one where...
are you? You're not kidding.
No. people who follow Mallory Ortberg, former co-editor of The Toast, may remember her tweet about Black Mirror that went viral about a year and a half ago, where she boiled it down to, and I quote, next on Black Mirror, what if phones but too much? That was really funny. And which That's made good. It into this episode, if you had an eagle eye and were paying attention and not looking at your phone, there's a moment where they're toward the beginning, like probably in the first 10 minutes of the episode, where they're reviewing the death of the first person in this episode, the newspaper columnist, and they go to one of the pages on the newspaper that she writes for, and that's another headline in the top corner: "What if phones, but too much?" Which, shout out
to
Black
Mirror.
They do this
a lot. They'll put references to previous episodes in the crawl on UKN.
Oh,
so we would like pause it and watch for that.
Someone did say in the comments on our site on previously.tv that it was the same the company in playtest was also in White Bear.
From season 2. Yeah, that makes sense.
Anyway,
and it does show up in the crawl on this one too a couple
Amazing.
Times.
This one was super duper creepy. And also just like starting from the premise of how are we going to address colony collapse, maybe with these robot bees. Oh, maybe they're not such a good idea after all. Like starting from something that's an actual like potentially apocalyptic problem humanity is facing.
They said in this episode that they had no idea what was causing colony collapse, but like in the last year they've kind of figured out that it is in fact pesticides that are doing that.
Right.
So yeah, not that makes. But I just thought.
But yeah, the complexity of this idea was yet the simplicity of how it was explained, I thought was really very well done.
I have another tangent to go on.
Okay, here we go.
Which is this. Okay, so the way that these bees are targeting the people that this crazy guy wants to kill
let's not throw the word crazy around. He's got some good ideas.
They enter an orifice and burrow in and, you know, make you go crazy by hitting the pain center of your brain.
Sure.
Okay. So once you know the bees are doing that, I kind of think it's pretty easy to create a defense against bees getting into your body. Not only
butt plugs.
Yeah. As I'm saying, like, first of all, get yourself in a secure room. Right. And, you know, you only have to like secure one or two ventilation shafts. Right. And all you need is like a really good fine mesh and you're golden. But even if that breaks down somehow,
problem solved.
Get some earplugs, get some nose plugs, you know,
wish
get
I had some earplugs.
Sort of like put some cheesecloth on a snorkel and put the snorkel in your mouth. Put a butt plug up your butt. Tape
and
shut
just
whatever
sit
else
like
you got
that for 24 hours.
Just wait it out. because the lady in the bathroom, she's thrashing around and they're like, she's like, open my mouth. Here comes the bees.
Well, some of that is a biological reaction. You can't help, Dave.
I'm just saying, once the word is out that the bees are coming to get you.
Right. Just get a SARS mask.
You sew everything up.
Well, that concludes our discussion of Black Mirror. Just kidding. Anyone have final comments?
I would like to add that in this episode, the sound design was really quite amazing.
Yes.
With the extremely faint, gentle, like metallic clicking of the teeny little bee-bot legs was really good. And also after the woman they were trying to protect died, like just them panting. And you're like, don't do that. Cover your mouth. But of course, the bees don't want them.
That made up for the terrible procedural computational graphics of the bee swarm.
Black Mirror season 3. We are covering every episode on previously.tv with a new episode each day this week. So come to the site and check it out.
As charming a segue as always, it's time for The Blotter Presents. This will be a short segment this week. I just have a couple upcoming program notes. The first of which, that The Killing Season, which is the 8-part docuseries about the same series of murders on Long Island that were covered in Robert Kolker's The Lost Girls book, which I recommend. I have watched the pilot of this series. It's very good, but for whatever reason, A, they're putting it on Saturday, and B, they moved it from the premiere from Saturday, November 5th to Saturday, November 12th. I definitely recommend setting your DVR for it when it comes up in the cycle. I don't know why they moved it. Maybe there was some movement on the case.
It's on A&E, you should say.
Yes, it is on A&E. So I guess I'll find out with the rest of you. I'm also interviewing the filmmakers tomorrow, or as you're listening to this today. So I'm excited to talk to them. I'm also excited that Sundance just ordered a 4-part docuseries called Murder in the Heartland in Cold Blood Revisited, and that will be directed by Joe Berlinger. I'm actually not sure how you pronounce his last name, but he's the Brothers Keeper Paradise Lost trilogy guy, one of them, and also directed a recent Whitey Bulger documentary that is on Netflix and is also worth checking out. The channel has also... Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, are you going to mention the screener that we got late last week from Lifetime?
Oh, no, I wasn't. But yes, yet another Sarah D. Bunting, JonBenet completist will be covering the Lifetime. This is the fictional one, right?
Well, it's scripted. Yes, it's a dramatized Who Killed JonBenet.
Okay, so yes, this will be the, you know, Lifetime movie about JonBenet. We got a screener. I will be covering it. I'm looking not forward exactly. I'm actually looking sideways at it, but yes, it should be entertaining for us all.
Awesome.
And I am not sure when Murder in the Heartland is premiering, but I think probably early next year, because the channel also got the rights to the movie In Cold Blood, and the 50th anniversary of that is in 2017. So I will keep you posted on all that stuff, but that is upcoming crime crap from The Bladder Presents.
Is this worse than jazz?
Whoops.
What?
Whoa. Oh, no. That extra special, Is This Worse Than Jazz, is brought to you today by the Pelfrey Foundation, who is asking in this advertisement, are raisins worse than jazz? I'll start us off, and I will say raisins, high in fiber, help you shit. Jazz just makes you feel shitty. So I don't think raisins are worse than jazz. But I will say, though, golden raisins are the spawn of Satan. Tara, what do you think?
I think raisins are worse than jazz, and here's why. Jazz, make sure you know it is on the horizon. It is inescapable. It is everywhere you don't want to be. Raisins, however, are sneaky. They disguise themselves as other things you may want to eat, like nuts or chocolate chips in a cookie, for example, and then reveal themselves horribly. Jazz, also terrible, at least does not try to conceal itself from your senses. Danny?
I say that raisins are not worse than jazz, and here's why. When somebody tells you that you are having raisins, you know what you're going to get. When somebody tells you, hey, we're going to listen to some jazz, you have no idea what you're going to get, and it could be like the theme music that you guys use for this segment.
Sarah?
That's a pretty good argument, Danny. Too bad you're wrong, because here's why raisins are totally worse than jazz. I will say, before I make this argument, that I'm very glad my esteemed colleague David T. Cole agrees that golden raisins are little sacks of evil pus.
Well,
regular
I agree
raisins, also terrible, because they lurk. Tara is exactly right. Jazz. You can avoid it. You never think jazz is a chocolate chip, because it's not. It's shitty jazz. Raisins are like, oh, it could be the edge of a chocolate chip, but no, it's just a wrinkle in a raisin. Boo.
All right.
All right. So that means, you know, on today's panel, we're split decision on are raisins worse than jazz. So we would like you guys to chime in. But whatever you think, because of this ad, I would like to remind everybody once again that raisins are the official fruit of Extra Hot Great, previously.tv, and... again, with this, the Beverly Hills 92.
Until someone else.
Until somebody buys an ad that says otherwise. All right, everybody. It is time to go around the dial. Our first stop is with Tara Ariana.
I'll just keep this brief. Jane the Virgin is back for the beginning of its third season. In the premiere, we found out that even though he got shot in the heart in the season 2 finale, Michael did not die. Surprise, it's a telenovela. He's alive.
Oh, man. Who's to blame?
Sinestro, the villain I don't care about?
A bad name.
Oh, I see. Took me a while. Sorry. I will, but I...
Woman! Woman!
God.
two things that Jane the Virgin is doing very well early in its third season. One is that all of episode two, which as we record this airs tonight, revolves around Jane having to react to her son acting out in terrible ways, biting people and being a dick and throwing temper tantrums and stuff, which, first of all, I love that the show doesn't sugarcoat that is part of parenting. Even if you're a very, very nice person like Jane is, sometimes your kid is a shit and you have to deal with it. And it doesn't make her beat herself up about it too much. It just, she, you know, figures out how to deal with the issue, which they think is that, you know, his schedule has been disrupted by, you know, his new stepfather getting shot. So they try and address that. And also she has to deal with the consequences of him acting out around strangers, which is embarrassing, but, you know, it's something that happens. It's part of parenting. And I like that the show doesn't sanitize it. It shows that sometimes parenting is great and sometimes it fucking sucks. Danny, you can speak to that, I'm sure. No, your child is perfect.
I was just going to say, she's not here right now. If she were, I would be telling, no, parenting is always 100% awesome.
There
are parts that suck.
Speaking of parenting or not doing so, the other thing that happened in the season finale was that Xiomara, Jane's mother, found out that she was accidentally pregnant and she's, you know, in her 40s and had already had a relationship earlier that season break up because Rogelio, my favorite, wanted to have more children and Xiomara didn't. And so they decided that was a good enough reason to continue not to be together. Very sensible for two people in their 40s to come to that realization and part ways. But I also wondered if the show was going to just do the switcheroo where it's like, well, she's pregnant anyway, so she might as well just have it. But no, she explicitly says in the premiere, I didn't want to stay with you, who I love so much, because I didn't want to have your baby. And so I'm not going to have Esteban's baby either. And in the second episode, they just, like, in a line of dialogue say she had a medication abortion and there are consequences to it, but it's just like, yep, that's what she did. So, like, I feel like this is a huge degree of progress for television for them to be like, yep, she went through with it. And now the only consequence is that she doesn't want her own mother to find out because she's embarrassed and her mother is, like, super Catholic and stuff. So that's the storyline. But there's nothing
about
that
to be on the CW, which is.
Yeah, well, that would be the only network that they could really.
Yeah.
Get it past the non-existent S&P, but yeah. Still but pretty surprising.
I was really impressed. I was like scared of how badly the show, even though it does a really good job with touchy issues like this, like it's a very progressive show, particularly around issues with immigration, obviously, because it has, you know, big Latino cast. This is an issue for the one character who was undocumented, but who, you know, in season two ended up going back and getting her green card and stuff. So I still was worried because this is like the third rail of television always. Like, how are you going to handle the unplanned pregnancy? But it was super matter of fact. And I was really impressed. Just another reason that Jane the Virgin is an excellent show. And for my plugs, Laura Waters, who previously I mentioned in this space as doing the supercut of the Law and Order recurring shirt, has also got a couple of excellent Halloween supercuts coming this week. So visit us on previously.tv to check those out this week. What was that?
How's that Bon Jovi? That's it.
Oh.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Well done.
All right. Dan, are you saying my oora oora oots aren't that good?
Wow. No, I'm saying wow.
I thought this was a Scooby-Doo reference, but okay.
I thought he was doing Scooby-Doo, too.
Glad I was wrong.
All right, Dan, what
originally
do you got?
I was going to talk about South Park and how tedious it has become the last couple of seasons with the 10-episode-long story arcs. But then I didn't want to bum everybody out, so I decided to talk about Supergirl, which recently started back up again. It's now on the CW, and it's still super enjoyable, and my 10-year-old daughter is still super into it. There was nothing she was looking forward to all summer than Supergirl returning.
Aww.
Yeah, and it's bright, and it's fun. I don't know that I would be watching it as much if I didn't have my daughter to watch it with me. I can say that she also eats up the big, broad feminist overtone, the girl power aspects of the show.
Yay.
Eats it up, loves it. So I was actually a little bit concerned when Superman showed up for the first couple of episodes of the season. Apparently, he's being kicked back to Metropolis, which is fine because his absence, other than, you know, text messages in the first season, seemed very, very strange. But he was in for a couple of exciting episodes this season, and we're really looking forward to another season of Supergirl.
And you will be covering tonight's episode as well for Previously on TV.
Yeah, as it happens, I'm doing the Black Mirror episode. I'm subbing in on Supergirl for tonight. And for my other plug, I would like to mention Bull, which I have been, I don't know, the word might be saddled with on Previously.tv.
We roped you into doing it.
Yeah. Oh.
Well done. It's CBS procedural, and it's done in a way that, I don't know, I mentioned this in the first piece that I wrote about it. I feel like it is much too specific and gimmicky to avoid being very repetitive and avoid, you know, being done after a season or two. But I felt the exact same way after I watched an episode or two of a show a long time ago called CSI. Clearly, I have zero idea of what would constitute a hit. The weird thing I find about Bull is that instead of just being annoyed by every episode, I find my anger and my annoyance is cumulative, so that I am angrier again, and it just gets worse and worse after every episode. So, like, I don't know if last week's episode was particularly dumb and insulting, or if it was just because we are three or four episodes in, and I think it's four episodes now.
Yeah.
And it just, it's, I don't know, it's
we
it's
get
terrible.
It. One off the show. Fuck. No. It's called an email.
So passive aggressive, jeez.
Yeah. Anyway, Bull, please enjoy my writing about it.
Can we back up?
Selling now.
Yeah. Before we move on, I just want to back up for 1 second. Did you and Molly watch Agent Carter when it was on?
No, I did. Agent Carter was a little bit too
grown up.
Yeah, a little bit too. Okay. It was something that I probably would have watched with her in a couple of years, because it felt like she would have enjoyed that too. I think the period aspect of it and it not being very superhero-y, she wouldn't have enjoyed that one as much.
Fair enough.
But she's currently really enjoying superhero stuff. She just discovered Squirrel Girl and has been enjoying that a lot.
Oh, nice.
And so this is something we look forward to every week.
Awesome.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Project Runway Startup. Yes.
Fashion Startup.
Lifetime has, Fashion Startup has spun off Project Runway yet again, into basically Shark Tank Top is what I'd be calling it. It's like the Shark Tank setup, but fashion people come and pitch a judging panel. I'm really liking it so far. Eve Beatty's excellent new show, Fact Sheet, at Previously.tv covered this in quite a bit of detail. If you missed it, there's only been one episode so far, and I'm sure it's on demand. But I like the different ways that they attack certain funding problems. Like, sometimes they give them a pop-up. Sometimes they're like, I'd like you to work for me, and then I own half your ideas. Other times they're like, you don't know what you're fucking talking about. Bye. But the panel's really good. They're like direct, but not mean. The only thing I don't like about it, and Eve also pointed this out, is the very stagey arguments amongst the panelists for who's going to do the deal. Mm-hmm. I don't think it adds anything. And I think both Shark Tank and this show, and frankly, Restaurant Startup when that was on, way oversubscribed how interesting we think that is versus the panelists or the show thinks it is. But it's, I don't know, it's still pretty good. It's on Thursdays at 10:30 after Project Runway, and I would recommend it.
Yeah, I watched the first one. I wished there were more pitches. I mean, I wonder if this is an issue of they couldn't get that many people because it was the first season. But I wished there was more, we got to see more of that, because I think there were only three, right, in the premiere?
Yeah, that's right.
That wasn't enough for me.
Yeah, and they also, at the one that was the pop-up, they did quite a good job of getting, potential customer feedback that actually felt real and ginned up conflict that's like, my rice bowl is a cold, on Restaurant Startup, okay.
Yeah, but with the guy with the hoodies, where it was clear from the beginning that they were like, what? No. they just kept talking to him for so long. It's like, just bye, move on to the next one.
Find somebody who makes handbags on Etsy and force him or her to come in, because this guy is
I mean, when you're
nowhere.
When the start of your pitch is like, we did a Kickstarter and it did not get funded, bye, that's the end. You know what I mean? But anyway.
Exactly. And also they're like, well, what's wrong with just getting a heavier coat?
Right.
I understood what he was trying to say, that he's like, yes, you don't want an extra layer, but yeah, if you don't know how to respond to that question, then you don't belong on my television set, beat
right
it.
But also the idea of the hoodie was like, you put your arms in it, like, I can do that with hoodies I own now. I don't need to spend $85 or however much it was for his. Anyway, whatever. We're just talking to each other, we can take this exactly to slack, move on.
Speaking of us talking to each other, my plug is for regular Project Runway coverage on previously.tv with many fine pictures cut by my esteemed colleague and wife, Tara Ariano.
Thank you so much.
This season has actually been quite good, I think, of yep the Lifetime seasons. I was starting to wonder if I really wanted to watch it anymore, but it's been good. The judges seem less bitchy. The designers seem like more on top of it. And I think we're at about the end of the cannon fodder. They really did start with a lot of people this year. It was like mm-hmm 28. And like, yeah, I think there are people we still maybe didn't meet that are like on the roof of FIT, like waiting to be called down.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, it's getting real now. We're getting towards single digits and it's been a good season. I've been mm-hmm liking it.
I agree.
All right. So briefly, let's talk about The Walking Dead. Finally, I mean, blah, people are dead. So they introduced the character of Negan and he batted to death a couple of the gang last night. I mean, brutal fashion. Holy fuck. But it, what I want to ask is, do people like, are you still engaged with this show for a show where anybody can die at any time, that seemingly has no end game? Does it still do it for you, Dan?
No.
Okay.
I found last night's episode just brutal and it wasn't fun. I mean, I don't expect violence to be fun, but I just, zombie survival is one thing. Survival from a barbed wire bat wielding psychopath, it was brutal. I have a pretty strong stomach and I had to turn away from it a couple of times. And yeah, I know what you're saying about a show that doesn't really appear to have any kind of end game. It just seems like they have to, they're not going to dial down the intensity or the violence. It seems like they just have to try to ramp it up to top what's gone on before. And I don't know how much longer I can continue watching it. I might give it another couple of episodes this season, but then I might be done.
Here is the problem with this show and all shows about the apocalypse. What are you living for? I know I keep saying this every time, but I mean, more than ever before, like, I guess Rick's responsibility is he has to stay alive for his stupid kids, which Dave, for one, was hoping Carl was one of the victims.
I hashtag death to Carl. It didn't work.
Grow like a foot between seasons. Like, I don't think he needs your help. He's fucking taller than you now.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And then I
go
said
build
to Dave,
a generator, jackass.
Yeah. Dave tweeted death to Carl. And I was like, that would really solve a lot of problems. I mean, just in terms of how much he's growing between seasons, this is like Walt on Lost all over again, where it's like they're going to come back after another year and he's going to be like, you know, shaving and driving a truck and stuff.
I thought they would kill him for those reasons. I thought he would be one of the guys killed for that reason.
Yeah.
I wasn't
yeah
hoping for it because I'm not a sick bastard or anything, but I did think Carl was going to be gone. And when Abraham was killed, I kind of went, eh, all right, he's one of the new guys. Glenn's death was a bit more of a surprise. But I don't know. I don't watch the show for surprise deaths at the hands of, like I said, barbed wire, bat-wielding psychopaths.
But the problem, here's the problem. Not the problem. But here's the conundrum of this show at this point. Post-apocalypse, need to get shit done. Who gets shit done? Warlords get shit done.
Thank you.
So, like, you're setting up a practical, like, okay, the guy is a maniac. He is a psychopath. But he's actually building a system that kind of works in this, you know, what are we at? 1 year after the apocalypse started or something like that?
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those. It's one of those moments where you think to yourself, "This guy is a real jerk, but he's got some good ideas."
Thank you. I hate to keep being this guy, but like honestly, if you're not going to be Negan, just kill yourself. Like, what are you living for? Honestly,
Anyways, but Dan, I agree with you. There were some brutal moments, like the actual Glenn death effects work was incredibly disgusting.
My wife watched this episode. this is only the second episode that my wife watched with me. She watched last year's season finale in Hawaii when we were there. She watched that. That was the first time she watched it. She watched this one. She had to turn away from the television so many times and do that thing. Okay, tell me when it's over. And it was so brutal that I worry that she looks at me differently now. Like, why does he watch the show? Oh, what is he getting out of this show?
And I'm so it's like watching Game of Thrones with your mom or something.
For the sake of my marriage, I might have to get out of the show.
One last thought on this, which is Tara, do you want to explain your webisode idea?
Oh yeah, I tweeted this last night, but I would like to, because what happens in the episode is Negan and takes Rick on a like mini road trip to like put him to the test with a whole bunch of zombies and whatever. But while they're gone for like presumably probably at least an hour, if not longer than that, because the sun comes up while they're gone. So they're gone for a while. And then they come back and everyone is still like kneeling in the same half a circle as they were before, with the same all of Negan's followers still holding like guns on them and stuff. I just said I would like a webisode about what happened with all the people that were left behind while Rick and Negan were gone. Like, what were they doing? Were they getting to know each other? Were they chatting? Was it just like intermittent threats? Did anyone try and get away? Like, it was a long time to just be sitting there in silence.
Man, you remember Sonic, guys? Getting those cherry limeades.
Oh God, I miss Chipotle so much. I would take E. coli in a second right now.
All right. So coming up is the canon, and Dan has got a very 80s canon submission coming. And when we were watching it, me and Tara thought, you know what would make this better is if they actually had the original commercials they still showed in this era. So I dug one up just as to both cleanse the palate and set forth what we're about to talk for. So here it is, 80s Canadian commercial of choice.
When you eat your Smarties, do you eat the red ones last? Do you suck them very slowly or crunch them very fast? Eat that candy-coated chocolate, but tell me when I ask. When you eat your Smarties, do you eat the red ones last? When you eat your Smarties, do you eat the red ones last? Do you suck them very slowly or crunch them very fast? Eat that candy-coated chocolate, but tell me when I ask. When you eat your Smarties, do you eat the red ones last?
All right, everybody, it is time for the canon. Dan, you are submitting this week. Please take it away.
Okay, I am submitting this week Hockey Night in Canada, season 65. No, I am submitting an episode of a show called Degrassi Junior High. And really briefly, for anybody who doesn't know what Degrassi Junior High is, which seems unfathomable to Canadians of a certain age, it was a CBC show in the mid-80s that was actually the second in the Degrassi franchise, following a, I don't know if it was a series of specials or short miniseries.
I think it was a show
called The Kids of Degrassi. It might have started as specials and become like a series later on called The Kids of Degrassi Street. Degrassi Junior High then became Degrassi High after a few seasons, and then there would be Degrassi The Next Generation, which I looked it up and ran for 14 seasons, which was incredible.
It's just now just called Degrassi, I think.
I think there's been a separation, and I think Degrassi The Next Class, they're calling it a new show. But anyway, regardless, there's been some form of Degrassi on for nearly 40 years, with the exception of a break of about 5 or 6 years in the 90s. It's ridiculous. And there have been actors involved right from the very beginning, right from the Kids of Degrassi Street up into Degrassi The Next Class. Anyway, I am presenting the 7th episode of season 1, which is called Best Laid Plans.
I just got the pun of the title. It took until now. Oh my God, I'm so stupid.
Yep. I promise you that at the time I had that went right over my head.
Oh, no doubt.
Anyway,
it went over my head on Saturday. So proceed.
the episode opens with Joey Jeremiah, one of the main stars of the show, hitting on student council president and Stephanie Kay, but she only has eyes for Wheels, who is one of Joey Jeremiah's best friends. They tried going out once, but Stephanie wound up getting drunk at the school dance and had to leave Wheels behind. She asks Wheels to a movie. He says yes, and they're both excited about it. Joey pretends not to be disappointed, but he starts spreading the news of Wheels and Stephanie's date in clip number 1.
Wheels and Steph are going to a movie.
Steph? She is the sexiest chick in this school. What did she say, Wheels?
Hey, this dude's a sex machine.
The music, man, listening to it is even worse. Like the music, it sounds like there's a video game going on underneath it the whole time, like a Street Fighter or Final Fight kind of thing.
Oh,
anyway,
my God, you're right. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Arthur is Stephanie's brother. Arthur has a friend named Yik, and Yik has something to show Arthur at school. It's a movie called Swamp Sex Robots. It's a pornographic movie so hot it'll fry your eyeballs, but they can't watch it at Yik's place because Yik's grandmother is always home, so they're going to try watching it at Arthur's mom's house. While this is going on, Stephanie is trying to share her news about Wheel's date with her friend Vula. Vula is still mad because Stephanie didn't thank her for helping her win the class presidency. So Steph instead shares her plans to dress all sexy for Wheels with the school twins, Heather and Erica. They point out a big problem.
School twins.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true.
If you watch the show, you know what I'm talking about. They're the school twins.
Yep.
They point out a big problem. Stephanie's mother doesn't know the way Steph dresses at school because Stephanie changes in the washroom in the mornings and the afternoons. But Stephanie goes to visit her mom at work, which is a pharmacy, significantly, and she learns her mother has a date this weekend. That's great news for Stephanie, and the next day at school, Arthur learns that this will also help his plans as well in clip number 2.
Oh, Steph! Are you and Mom going out anytime this weekend?
As a matter of fact, we're both going out Friday night. Mom's got a date.
A date? That's great!
Yeah.
All right! All right, Swamp Sex Robots, here we come. Woo! Woo!
There's some fantastic, awkward grade 7 dork high-fiving going on for 5 minutes after that clip ends. I also want to take a minute and describe the VHS cassette, Kids Ask Your Parents, that is Swamp Sex Robots. It comes in this red, there's no pictures on it. It's this red case with Swamp Sex Robots stenciled on it. And I think it says sex, sex, sex down the side of it. And I was actually shocked years later when I learned what pornographic movie videos actually look like, what the covers actually were, because I just sort of assumed that's what they all look like. Anyway, Stephanie is still giddy about her upcoming date, and Heather or Erica, I don't know which one is which, asks what she'll do if Wheels quote-unquote tries anything. Stephanie is always eager to be older than she actually is, so she offhandedly says that she might let him. She looks pensive immediately, but there's a few lurking chowderheads in the library who are more than happy to spread the word in clip number 3.
Wheels, you're gonna make it!
What?
Make it!
With Stephanie, HK, H for hot.
What?
What?
We heard her. She's got a plan.
She says she can handle it.
Really?
Really? Hope you're up for it.
Hey, if she wants it, she'll get it.
All the way with Stephanie K.
Right, Wheel.
Right?
Lucky dude,
she's hot.
Right.
That last little bit you heard was Arthur, who happened to be in a bathroom stall as Joy Jeremiah Wheels were discussing this with the two guys, Snake and the little kid who says she can handle it. I don't remember his name either. But the word is out now. Wheels and Stephanie are planning to, in capital letters, do it this weekend. So with the pressure mounting, Stephanie and Wheels ask their mom and dad, respectively, when they had sex for the first time, which leads to awkwardness for everybody.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It was awful. It was worse than watching Negan batter Glenn with a baseball bat.
Yeah.
So now, Vula may be mad at Stephanie, but she's still worried her friend is getting in over her head and asks if she really plans to have sex with Wheels in clip number 4.
Don't you see, Vula? I already messed up one day. I want him to like me. Well, if that's the only reason he likes you, and just because he wants to doesn't mean you have to go all the way. Maybe I want to do it too. Do you?
Okay, I was waiting for a music cue at the end there too, but I guess not. Meanwhile, Joey is taking Wheels to the pharmacy, for condoms because, as he puts it, this is the 80s and guys got responsibilities in clip number 5.
Tell it to Shane.
Seriously.
All right. Safe city.
Shh.
What do you want? We've got French Stallion, Rib Delight, your industrial strength, your variety pack.
I don't know.
We need professional help. Yo, Could we get some service here at safe section?
Joyce.
What does industrial strength mean, please? Actually, I don't want to know, but gross.
I have no idea. And also, I didn't know at the time this episode aired, they keep calling them safes, which must be a slang term for the 30s.
Yeah.
I was going to ask.
Yeah,
I never heard anyone use that when I was a kid.
Industrial strengths are riveted for her pleasure.
Those were advertised a lot in Jersey, actually, because everybody had the long nails. So I think that was how it was marketed. It was like that it was whatever.
It's a trash bag.
Yeah.
Gross.
Sorry.
So Joey Jeremiah has called over some help, and it is, of course, Stephanie's mom who helps Wheels. She also looks sad and judgmental while she's doing it, and she gives him a couple of pamphlets on family planning and STDs. She doesn't know who he is just yet. But there's nothing left for it to all fall apart now because Stephanie's mom's date turns out to be a little bit later than Stephanie planned. And because this is the 80s, Stephanie can't just text Wheels and say, come over at 8 o'clock instead of 7:30. And Wheels arrives while Stephanie's mom is still home in clip number 6.
You're the boy from the drugstore. What are you doing here? What are those flowers for?
He's very interested in horticulture.
Stephanie, get down here.
Yeah, so Stephanie comes downstairs. Her mom sees how she's dressed. Both dates are off, and Swamp Sex Robots has to wait another day. Now, by Monday, Wheels and Stephanie have agreed to cool it down and just be friends, but Vula asks Steph a question that she can't answer in our final clip.
Stephanie, you aren't really going to do anything, were you?
Oh God!
Danny, so you fucking maniac!
Okay, so that's best laid plans. I do think this is one of the more memorable episodes of a series that did its best to reflect teenage life with honesty and compassion and realism. It was always a lot less flashy than other shows targeted at teenage audience. When you compare it to shows like 90210, I thought that the actors always looked and behaved like people that you knew did, people in your own class. I don't know if this was, or maybe they were just Canadians. I don't know if this reflected American experience whatsoever. Maybe Sarah can speak to that. But one of the things I found interesting is The Beverly Hillsters and 90210 never really acted like this. And I mean, they were never as relatable. Degrassi aimed for relatableness that I don't think 90210 and other shows like that often even tried for and far less achieved. But one of the things I also think is remarkable when you compare the two shows is that they overlap in time. Like if they were running at the same time, Brandon and Brenda Walsh would have been in grade 7. At the time this episode aired. Anyway, I believe Degrassi Junior High belongs in the canon, and Best Laid Plans is one of the most memorable, as well as utterly representative of what we think of when we think of the show, and I think it would be a worthy entry, and I turn it over to you.
Well, you're so right. The show is complete cheese, obviously, but you're right about the relatability for sure, because the first thing I said in like the first second of the episode was, oh my God, they're all so homely. Like, with nothing against those kids, all of them, especially the ones we know because we saw them on later
Degrassi. Who amongst us was
shows.
Not homely in high school?
Absolutely.
Or now,
oh
frankly.
My God. Yeah. I look exactly like all of these kids, all of these girls, like the horrible hair, the bad fashion. Yes. Yeah. Check, check, check. Like, I'm not better than anyone. But I'm saying is like it is very realistic, way more so for sure than Beverly Hills 90210, when even like the day players are very cute and perfectly turned out and stuff. So like the show is so scruffy, like it's so Canadian in
it
all of
like
its rough edges. Like even the lighting is bad. All of it is just so
the woman who sings the opening theme can't quite hit the notes. Yeah. Bad.
You ever been to a really cheap, shitty movie theater where they're obviously using like the grade D light bulb to project, and the movie, you know, it's a bright day, but it makes it look like it's like extremely overcast all the time.
Yes.
That is like the entirety of this episode. Like everything is dark and gloomy. And
yeah, like, my brother and I used to wonder about that. Like, is the sun ever oof?
Yeah. It's because the Canadian taxpayer was paying for it all.
Well, Degrassi's right. On the east end of Toronto. It was a pretty crappy part of town back then. So I don't know. I can't really speak to the sun.
Yeah. The kids are like a real mix of, I mean, clearly they were deliberately cast for diversity, and they still do that on the current show now that there's, you know, it's very representative of the mosaic of Canadian culture. That means these kids are good actors and some of them are terrible.
Yes. But this would have been one of the first show, like, you know, this is the era in which they finally started to realize, hey, we could have more than just white people on a TV show.
Yes.
So, you know, that is good.
Yeah. But the kids have an excuse for being shitty actors. They're kids, the parents in this show.
And both, what are the flowers for?
The Wheel's dad and Stephanie's mom are so bad. They're so hard to watch. All of that adds up to the charm of Degrassi. And since Danny and I are, I think, a year apart, this is obviously from my childhood, too, and is very nostalgic. And I can't possibly vote against this without voting against myself. So excellent presentation. But I'm very curious to know what our American panelist has to say. So please, Sarah, tell us what you think.
The very first time that I met Tara and Dave way back in the 1990s, I was picked up at Pearson Airport, crammed into the back of a Colt and driven directly to Degrassi. It was like, what do you want to do? I'm like, where's Degrassi? I'm not sure whose idea it was, but that did happen. This aired in various PBS markets at various times. In our market, it was Sunday afternoons. It was like the only show that my brother and I could agree on at that time. I think we were getting them like a year or so after they were on in Canada. And for several years, we thought it was a documentary because there was no light. People were out of focus sometimes. For a while, like the first version of the theme song that she's really straining to hit that note. And it's like this, I mean, was that someone's cousin? Like we just thought it was charming, but we were like, but this can't be scripted because it's fucking bad. And also, they all look like, I have this conversation with my husband all the time about how we love scripted shows from not America, because they actually have people that, like, they're perfectly good looking and charming and competent, but they look like actual people and not like they were grown in a lab and given Ben Affleck's discarded caps. And you're not asked to believe that cops are 26 years old and so on and so forth. As for the realism, like, I went to girl school for 12 years, and some of this was like, nah, I don't know. I don't know if it's really like this for, like, a co-ed public junior high, because I didn't go to one. But the fucking melodrama about a single date and pretending that you knew fuck all about sex, that's right.
Yeah.
The terrible hair, like, that some people shouldn't have bob haircuts, Melody, been there. Shaker knit V-neck sweater worn back to front for some reason, Kathleen. But like, even the bitches weren't even that bad because Canadian. So I was like, I'd like to move there. Because like, even Alexa was like, yeah, I could handle her. But yeah, this was like a staple of our like teen and tween viewing with me and my brother. And then when The Next Generation debuted, I was living in Toronto. Our great good friend Paul Quinn was on my couch watching it on like a 12-inch screen. It was so exciting. I mean, this is like viewing history for me. I didn't specifically remember this episode or the fact that Stephanie K was like such an over-the-top trampy dresser and looked like Baby Jane with the makeup.
Yes!
It's like, not even, you can't even be disturbed by how overly sexualized it is, because she looks literally like a clown, like from the circus.
And she's missing a front tooth. Like, she's the sex bot of the school. She's just straight up missing a tooth right in the front of her mouth.
God. Yeah. Well, okay.
Also,
Queen East, what are you going to do?
I forgot to say in my commentary, but I tweeted it to Danny when the weekend while we were watching this. I really needed all of these children to stop saying sexy all the time, describing each other as sexy, sex machine. Like, they're 14, and they're actually 14. Like, yeah. They really look like they're the age they're
tops. Arthur and Yick are like 12.
Yeah, right. Anyway, Dave.
I remember being in...
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, speaking to what Sarah was saying, I remember being embarrassed when I learned that Americans knew about Degrassi Junior High. I sort of thought that it was Canadian secret shame. But there's a reference to it. And like, I remember being in a theater. I think it was Chasing Amy. It was some sort of Kevin Smith movie where somebody talks about watching Degrassi Junior High. And there was, I think there was this ripple in the audience like, what? People, Americans know about this? Well, how did this happen? You know. Anyway, Dave.
Okay. So my question is, why is Arthur so bad at keeping the videotape hidden?
Yeah. Just
have a knapsack, presumably.
He's with his buddy at school, and they're just like, is it porno? And they're like at their lockers in the hall, just like waving it above their head. Yeah. And then when he gets home and his sister and his mother is there, he's actually doing the behind the back, you know, hidden flowers thing with his videotape. And nobody's calling him on it. Come on. And then he sits down after getting away with it with his sister before his mom comes in, and he like doesn't hide it anywhere. He doesn't like stick it in a drawer, stick it behind some cereal boxes just to get it out of. No, he just keeps it behind his back. Arthur, why is Arthur so stupid?
And they're
Arthur.
He opens the door and they're literally all yelling, "We want to see the porno!" Anybody's home.
Yeah. And they're all stacked up in the doorway like a frat prank in a phone booth, like guys.
You didn't mention the when they're looking for safes at the pharmacy, the out of central casting conservative British heritage
giving them
grandma
dirty
looking at greeting cards, the one aisle over, giving him the dirty look for talking about prophylactic.
Also, wheels silhouetted
perfect
by the setting non sun in his window seat, very dramatically reading pamphlets about VD.
The thing I got most excited about for this whole episode, though, was the spotting of Beatrice brand milk, which I believe hasn't been around in at least a decade. I think they were bought out. But yeah, they were drinking that good old homogenized milk with their cereal at breakfast, like a bunch of weirdos. The other thing about the kitchen is that at one point there is a cabinet open. So you can see like the inside of the door, and the inside of the door has like a basket mounted to it. And there's like 7 different types of food wrap containers, like boxes, you know, like, you know, tinfoil and saran wrap and more saran wrap and another tinfoil. I was like, I don't know what's going on here. That was kind of weird. But besides all these small things, this was an absolute shit show of an episode. And what a delightful shit show it was.
This was your first episode.
Are you kidding?
I've never seen. Any
wow
brand
there's,
of Degrassi.
There's one aspect of the series, one iconic aspect of the series that is not present in this episode that I would have liked to have had an episode with it in it. And I'm going to leave it to, I think, Sarah to guess what one thing that she thinks of when she thinks of Degrassi High.
Yep.
I did a count when I log lined this season. I did a count of the number of times that someone was called a broomhead or a narble, and neither occurred.
That's a good point. No, that's not it.
Was it the zit remedy?
There you go.
Oh yeah, everybody did want something, and we did have to give it up to watch this.
You have to play that song for Dave with its utterly incomprehensible lyrics.
Okay,
that every Canadian our age, well, I guess except for Dave, knows still.
Well, he's a little bit older. I think that's why. It's the 3 years of a generational difference that would, like, he would be too old for this to have watched this when it was on if he was.
But I'm his age and American, and I know it. That's
you're
weird.
Really immature.
Yeah. Yeah, but for Dave, it'd be like there's a song from the Andy Griffith Show that Dave probably knows by heart.
Anyway,
the radio show, you mean, on the wireless.
All right.
Sure.
So, round table, what is the plot of Swamp Sex Robots?
Well, it's set in Florida.
In the Okeechobee Swamp.
Are they like sweaty robots that come to your house and they're just swampy and they have sex with you?
No, they live in the swamp.
Okay. Wait, Florida or like the bayou?
Either.
Okay.
Also, how do they, I mean, they don't live anywhere. But how, in a swamp environment, especially with presumably orifices do they not break down?
Well, they were specifically developed to withstand humidity, hence the swamp part. Sorry.
Okay.
I envision them like the Swamp Thing, but mechanical.
Ah, yeah.
What could be sexier than that?
Yeah. Okay. So, thing. You know, every time we do a canon submission for a show that's obviously super terrible, but is like really enjoyable.
How dare
you? I'm always reminded of this one guy who like really, really was upset that we voted in the very first Beverly Hills 90210 canon submission that Sarah did back in
yes!
the first. Like, he was real. Like, how dare you? Like, yeah. you didn't vote in whatever. Mm-hmm. Game of Thrones or something like that, but you voted in this. How dare you, sir? It was like almost like that.
he probably doesn't listen anymore.
No, he doesn't listen anymore. I'm sure. But you know, we all watch TV for different reasons. TV has a lot to offer, from the snooty highbrow thinkiness to the stupid, dumb, terribly acted, but thoroughly enjoyable half-hour offerings. Such as this. This was just stem to stern, poorly made, poorly acted, poorly written, poorly scored,
poorly lit,
poorly effected with their credit sequence where they threw every 1980s effect they could afford into the credits, neon shadows and scribbles and everything. It was fantastic. Thoroughly enjoyable. I rate it only on that. I really loved it. I think that if you've never watched this, you can just jump into this episode, jump right out, never watch another episode of this show again, and feel like you really got your money's worth. As far as I can tell, it's only available on Amazon. You're going to have to plop down $2 to watch this thing. Mm-hmm. By the way, the Amazon Prime transfer is somebody's videotape from 1980 that they just found, and that's what Amazon decided to use. You can actually see the tracking lines at the top of this transfer.
On the DVDs, too.
It's the perfect package.
Yeah.
So I am going to say this is definitely canon worthy for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, me too. Agree.
Sarah?
Yes, this was my first exposure to Canadian culture, and I'm so glad that that was true. In honor of my brother, who bought me the entire original series, including Kids of Degrassi Street, on DVD for Christmas, and I can report the scan lines are on DVD as well. Broomheads, I'm pleased to vote yes. Thank you, Dave.
Excellent. Very happy.
All right, that means Degrassi Junior High Season 1, Episode 7, The Best Laid Plans. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hoot Great Canon.
Buy swamp sex robots.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it's time for winner and loser of the week. Tara has our winner.
Well, Neve Shulman took a break from being cyberbullied by me to have his child, or rather his girlfriend slash fiance did, Laura Perlongo. They have given birth to a human child. The name is Cleo James, and I had to check because that could be a child of either gender, but it is a human girl. So congratulations to them both, and good luck, Cleo James. Sarah.
I am shocked that the name is that relatively normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. My loser of the week is sneakers fans. I want to be super excited that this movie, which is a cult favorite. I'm sure my friend and esteemed colleague Joe Reed would agree that this should have gotten the series treatment ages ago. Unfortunately, it's going to be on NBC, which will totally defang it and cast a bunch of poreless 20-somethings to play all the roles that were played by the likes of Tobolowsky et al. In the original. Yeah. I hope that's not true, but I know it's going to be true. Also, NBC, the last 10 years, yikes.
Oh, okay. So that brings up an interesting question, which is this. Yikes. It's yikes time.
Again.
All right. right, everybody. This is the eighth game time of the season. Sarah won last week's game time, putting her 1 point away from winning the season.
That's what you may not miss, that you may not know if you don't listen to the minis, which is our last game time was a standalone mini, and that's what happened.
Tara has 2 points. Value guests have one. Today we are playing Kid Stuff from Greg Lamb, who earns himself an extra credit. Redeemable for an extra hot great mini topic of his choosing when they return properly sometime in the near future. Kids Stuff is a 5-round test of your knowledge of kids shows throughout TV history. Mm-hmm. I'll explain the rules of each round as we go along. So let's toss it to Picky to see who is going to go first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. So we're going to go Dan, Sarah, Tara. And please remember where you are in the order when you're next, because I don't have my little handy cues in this document for reasons I won't bore you with.
Okay.
So are we ready to play Kid Stuff?
Yes, sure.
Here we go.
I'm ready.
Round one, fill in the blank. We have 9 questions. Fill in the blank. All right.
Yep.
Dan, yeah. I taught a blank. I did.
I taught a putty tat.
Putty tat is correct. I knew you were going to get that one, but that's 2 points. If you needed a hint, I will tell you the show.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Yep.
So 2 points for Dan there. On to Sarah.
Yep.
Who lives in a pineapple under the sea? Blank.
I always get this guy. SpongeBob SquarePants.
Tara Ariana.
Yes, sir.
By the power of Grayskull. Blank.
He-Man?
That's the show.
Oh, Skeletor?
No.
Okay.
I have the power is okay. The end of that. Mm. All right. And now you know, and knowing, blank.
Is half the battle.
That's correct, from G.I. Joe. Sarah D. Bunting. And I would have gotten away with it if it weren't for you, blank.
Oh, shit.
I'm going to give you a little bit of leeway here. And I would have gotten away with it if it weren't for
if
you,
if it weren't
blank.
For meddling kids.
Meddling kids.
Nice.
I would have accepted any nosy kids.
Yeah, pesky kids.
Pesky kids.
Yeah. Shitty kids.
All right.
Zombie kids.
Tara.
Yes.
Thundercats, blank.
Roar.
Thundercats. Ho, Tara.
Ho?
Yeah, okay. And then he raises his sword, and shit happens.
Okay, I don't
know. And then Mumra's all like, oh, fuck. Shit's going down. Got to get out of here.
This is all news to me.
Better change to my more strong form,
mm-hmm.
You know, because he's old and weak. And then he changes into Mumra. He's like, he's totally ripped.
Sure.
He's like, you and me, Lion-O, let's do it.
All right.
And by doing it,
get on
he means
it.
Going all the way with Lion-O K.
I am here for this.
Form feet and legs. Form arms and torso. Blank.
Oh, what was the name of that?
Remember, you can ask for a hint if you don't even know what that is. But
yeah, I know what it is. Okay, what's the name of the show?
It is Voltron.
It forms Voltron.
And I'll form the head.
Oh.
I'll form the head.
Oh, okay.
That's all right, Sarah. Of course, you know, blank, and I will add, this happens while somebody's eating a carrot. Of course, you know, blank.
While somebody's eating a carrot?
Yes.
Just to buy myself some time, what's the name of the show?
It is Merry Melodies et al.
Oh, et al.
Yeah. Anybody?
Mm-mm.
This means war.
Never would have gotten that.
All right, last question of round one of fill in the blank. Tara Ariano.
Yep.
Swiper, no swiping. And then Swiper says blank.
Aw, man.
Correct. All right, that's round one.
Okay.
Somebody's got a couple nieces.
Yeah. I have 2 points. Danny and Sarah are tied with 4 each.
All right. Ooh. Now it is time for round two. Fill in the blank, TV theme song karaoke edition. 9 questions.
Oh.
All right.
Yep.
Who's the leader of the club that's made for you and me?
MICKEYMOUSE.
For 1 point or 2 points?
That's just 1 point.
Okay.
All 1 point. Whoa. Here.
Okay.
Okay.
We're two, we're four, we're six, we're eight, shunting trucks and hauling freight. Red and green, brown and blue, we're the...
Shunting.
Yeah.
I told you never to call me that. I don't know.
Anybody?
No.
We're the...
Thomas the Tank Engine?
Yeah, that's the show. It's from Thomas and Friends, which I think is associated.
That I figured, but...
We're two, we're
that.
Four, we're six, we're eight. Shunting trucks and hauling
shunting
freight.
And hauling
red
freight.
And green, brown and blue. We're the really useful crew.
Right. Yes.
All right. This is Tara.
And that answers.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Heroes in a half shell. Turtle power.
Yeah, and the blank was just turtle power, so I'm going to give you one day point for providing more information that was needed.
Oh, okay.
You didn't even let me finish, and you knew the answer. All right, back to Dan.
Yeah.
Transformers, more than meets the eyes. Transformers.
Transformers, more than meets the eye. Transformers. Transformers. Singing it in my head.
Transformers, more than meets the
more
eye.
More than meets the
eye. Transformers.
Heroes in disguise.
Pardon?
Heroes in disguise?
So close. Robots in disguise.
Robots.
Why did I know that one?
Robots in disguise.
All right.
Robots in disguise.
All right. Here's Sarah. A question for Sarah.
Yep.
Would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you
be my neighbor?
Tara Ariano.
Yes.
Spider-Man. Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Is he strong? Listen, bud. He's got...
radioactive blood.
Now, do you know that from the show or from the Moxie Fruva song?
From the show.
Okay. All right. I didn't know if you ever seen the show. We're animaniacs. Dot is cut and Yakko yaks. Wacko packs away the snacks while Bill Clinton...
I'm just going to have to go with a guess on this one and say plays the sax.
Yeah!
Good guess.
Well done.
Never seen Animaniacs.
I'm missing a question here. All right.
To Sarah.
The doc is in to fix you up. If you're a toy, then you're in luck. It's okay. Don't be afraid. The doc. Any idea?
Make sure you've got it made. No idea what this is.
Do you know this one, Tara?
I know the show, but I don't know the theme song. It's Doc McStuffins.
It's Doc McStuffins.
But I don't know the theme.
If you're a toy, then you're in luck. It's okay. Don't be afraid. The doc really knows her stuff. Really knows her stuff.
Sure.
Nope. Tara Ariano.
Yes.
Last question of this round. Who's that girl? What's her name? Is she cool? Is she lame? Oh, you're talking about what's her name?
Pepper Ann?
Wow.
I used to watch that show sometimes.
Well done.
It was a good show. Kathleen Wilhoit played the title character. All right. Sarah and I are tied with 5 each. Danny has 6.
Okay. Now we're at round 3, lightning round enemies list. I'll give you the name of a bad guy of a series. You have to give me the series in question.
Okay.
That's all there is to it. Dan, Chairface
yes.
Chippendale.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Chair face Chippendale. And I will Chair say this character is exactly what you think he is.
Pee-wee's Playhouse.
That's a good
That's
guess.
What I would guess too.
Chair face Chippendale wanted to carve his name into the moon. And he's from the Tick.
Oh, okay.
Yes. He got as far as Cha. Okay. So the moon now says Cha on it in that universe.
The Tick.
All right. Next up, the Comet Empire. Comet Empire.
Is this Thomas the Tank Engine again?
No, it's not. Like, not even close. That's Star Blazers.
Never heard of it.
I didn't even know that existed.
Nope.
So
Star Blazers. Oh, man. All right. I've talked about Star Blazers on the show before.
I don't listen when
Tara.
You... I'm not a subscriber.
Cobra.
Yes. Cobra is G.I. Joe.
What?
Skeletor. Shut up. You just got an easy one. Skeletor.
Oh, okay. All right. He-Man.
Apologize
and
to the game.
The Masters of the Universe.
Apologize to the game.
I'm sorry, game.
For Sarah, Gargamel.
The Smurfs.
Legion of Doom.
Justice League.
Ooh, no, Super Friends.
Oh, okay, I don't know. Yeah.
Bluto.
I thought they were the same. Yep.
Bluto.
Popeye.
Team Rocket.
Team Rocket.
Yeah, we just lost the millennial crowd. They're off. They're not listening to this podcast anymore.
So it's not Speed Racer then?
Probably not.
That's what I would have guessed too.
Speed Racer.
Anybody?
No.
Pokemon.
No. Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh.
No.
All right. Last for this round for Tara, the Beagle Boys.
The Beagle Boys. Is this Mickey Mouse Clubhouse?
Oh, you're close. DuckTales.
Oh, shit.
DuckTales.
Okay, still very close game. Sarah and I are still tied, but now with 6 each, Danny has pulled ahead with 8.
All right. This is round 4, true or false questions about kids' TV.
Oh, boy.
Oh, God.
Dan.
Oh, dear.
In 2013, the popular Sesame Street segment Elmo's World was replaced by Hip Hop Elmo. True or false?
False.
Correct. It was replaced by Elmo the Musical. Elmo the Musical.
I thought it was going to be something where it was like, it was 2012.
Well, yeah. They do like the
jazz Elmo. Yeah.
As for Sarah, a Disney Junior show called Tinkerbell's Touch of Magic, inspired by the character from Peter Pan, is currently airing.
Ew.
Or to put it another way, there's a show called Tinkerbell's Touch of Magic. True or false?
Currently on right now. Yeah. That sounds true.
Incorrect. There is a show called Jake and the Neverland Pirates.
Yeah, I need that one.
Yeah. Tiger, sadly. Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood is a currently airing PBS show, which is a spinoff of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
True.
Dan, the 80s show Pee-wee's Playhouse included in this cast Lawrence Fishburne, Phil Hartman, and Natasha Lyonne.
Okay.
All those people.
Lawrence Fishburne is true.
That your answer?
Okay. What were the 3 names? Lawrence Fishburne, Natasha Lyonne,
and Phil Hartman.
Who's the other one?
Phil Hartman.
I know Lawrence Fishburne is true. I don't know about the other two, but I am going to say true.
That was true.
Ding, ding.
In the 80s, the WWF lent its wrestling superstars to a show called Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling, in which Hulk Hogan led the good guy wrestlers against the bad guy faction led by Rowdy Roddy Piper, R.I.P.
Was there a wrestling cartoon?
You said true?
She said true.
You are correct. And now let's hear a little bit.
Super true.
From Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling.
Oh, boy.
Oh, please, no, it's not.
Hold it. I'm sorry to have to do this, but you'll have to pay a hot dog tax before you eat that.
A tax?
You don't have to pay it. You can't always spend the night in jail. That's a $100 fine for selling unlicensed hot dogs.
But I can't afford this. I'll go broke.
Tell it to the mayor.
We'll do just that.
The mayor's gone too far this time.
Well, come on, we're going to City Hall.
And that's a little bit of the riveting and fast-paced, apparently.
This is the storyline they went with?
Are you sure that was a cartoon and not...
A season 6 of The Wire?
No, not the setup for Hulk Hogan's sex tape?
Oh.
We'll do just that!
In the 80s, superstar ballet dancer Mikhail Baryshnikov had a cartoon based on him called Misha, where he fought bad guys using ballet moves.
False.
Correct.
What?
Oh, no.
Oh, you're correct. You're correct. Oh,
okay.
Oh, jeez.
No, I saw. No, that's.
What?
That is Mr. T cartoon, as we all know.
Okay.
And that's the Cold War.
With ballet.
Yeah.
All right. The 80s cartoon, The Real Ghostbusters, featured all of the movie's cast.
You mean like voice work? No, that's false. False, false, false.
It is false. Who was the only one that came for the cartoon?
Ernie.
I believe it was. Yeah, was it Ernie?
Oh, yeah.
Ernie Hudson.
Dora the Explorer spawned a spinoff called Dora Into the City, which features an older version of Dora with her tween friends.
I hope this is false.
Because that's your answer?
Yes.
It's true.
Fuck!
Last question of round four for Tara.
Yes.
Agreed.
A currently airing Dr. Seuss adaptation is Green Eggs and Ham, where the cat in the hat tries to make kids try new food.
False.
There is a Dr. Seuss show called The Cat in the Hat. Knows a lot about that, but that's as far as we get here. All right, that's round four.
Big, big moves this round. Sarah has 7. I have 9. Danny has 11.
All right. Well, there's lots of opportunity here in round 5 for point movement.
Okay.
15 questions, 2 possible points per question.
Oh, boy.
All right.
Yep.
I am going to name the a background character to a kid's show. You have to name the show. If you need a hint, I will give you a second background character.
Okay.
All right.
Yep.
Starting with Dan, Camilla. Camilla.
Camilla.
Guess now for 2-point attempt or ask for a hint.
I feel like I know this, but give me a hint, please.
Okay, your second character is Baby Scooter.
Camilla, that would be the Muppet Babies.
And Baby Scooter from the Muppet Babies.
For 1 point.
That's like the challenge?
Flintheart Glomgold is your background character, sir. Flintheart Glomgold.
Flintheart Glomgold?
Correct.
I think I'm going to be mad, but hint, please.
Scrooge McDuck. Scrooge McDuck.
DuckTales?
Correct. Hampton J. Pig.
Shit. I feel like I know this one too. Hint.
Babs Bunny. Babs Bunny.
Is this Tiny Toon Adventures?
It is okay. Tiny Toon Adventures.
Nice.
Back to Dan. Winston Zeddemore.
That would be the real Ghostbusters.
It would be for 2 points. Nice. Correct. Sarah. Chief Quimby.
Hint.
Dr. Claw.
Chief Quimby and Dr. Claw.
Oh,
nice
bonus
Dave.
Hint.
I didn't hear that, so it doesn't matter.
The second hint was Dr. Claw, Sarah.
Okay. It doesn't really help me.
God damn it, Sarah.
I mean, it helps me in my heart. I don't know. Inspector Gadget. I have no idea.
Ding.
Oh.
Wait, really?
Yes.
Oh. Yep. Okay.
I think I'd give myself 3 day points.
Yeah.
There. Okay.
That was very good.
This
that
is
was
Tara.
Better than your Bon Jovi.
Thank you. Wanted.
Oh. Dead or alive.
Theodore.
Theodore. Hint.
Simon.
Oh, fuck the chipmunks.
Fuck the chipmunks?
Fuck the chipmunks is my answer.
Chipmunks.
Can you give me the
fuck
actual
the
name
chipmunks.
Of the show, please, actually?
It's a Modern Sewing Family. No.
The chip. I don't know, then.
It's Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Sorry, who is this?
Danny.
Dan. Ash Ketchum.
Ash Ketchum.
Yep.
Catch him. Hint, please.
Pikachu.
Okay. Pokemon?
Pokemon. Apologies to all our millennial listeners.
You're too young.
Venger.
That's
Venger.
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 Okay. Hint.
Dungeon Master.
Dungeons and Dragons?
You are correct. Tara.
Yep.
Rosie.
Take no joy in it.
The Jetsons.
2 points.
Nice.
Back to Dan. Wendy and Marvin. Whoops. Sorry.
Hey.
They're together, Wendy and Marvin?
Wendy and Marvin as one clue.
Okay.
A Super Friends.
The nice. Second clue was Aquaman. Jeez. Yes, correct. Patty Mayonnaise. Patty Mayonnaise.
SpongeBob.
Doug.
Doug, yes, along with Pork Chop. Dee Dee. Dee Dee.
Dexter's Lab.
Dexter's Lab. Rotori.
Oh.
Correct. All right, everybody's last question coming up, so let's get those scores.
Oh, boy. Sarah has 10. I have 14. Danny has 17.
Oh, well.
Eagle.
All right. For Dan, Fufa. Fufa.
Shannon Doherty.
Yes!
I was just going to say.
I need a hint, please.
DJ Lance Rock.
Oh.
DJ Lance Rock, did you say?
Yes.
DJ Lance
Okay, this is
Rock.
This is a trick question. There is no such show that has those characters.
Yeah, there is.
Your kid is too old.
Yeah.
Tara, what is it?
You know it?
Now I can't remember what it's called.
Yo Gabba Gabba.
Yo Gabba Gabba.
Oh, Yo Gabba Gabba, of course. Anyway.
Sarah's last question. Magenta. Magenta.
Hint.
Steve or Joe? Steve or Joe?
Jim?
No.
That was my guess too. From
yeah,
magenta.
The magenta. That's what I, as soon as I said magenta, I thought, Sarah's going to go for 2 points on Jem. Steve or Joe was the dude from Blue's Clues.
Oh, right. Ugh.
Gobi is our last hint for Tara.
Gobi?
Like, yeah, G O B Y. I've never heard of the show.
Oh, good okay. Luck. Well, I was going to say Fraggle Rock, but now I won't. All hint?
Right. Yeah. Mr. Grouper.
Mr. Grouper?
Yeah. Gobi and Mr. Grouper.
Fish Police.
That is close.
Is it?
I'm going to give you a day point for getting the fish stuff. Yeah. Bubble Guppies.
Oh, okay. I've heard of that.
Yeah, you've heard of that. Bubble Guppies. All right. Score break, please. I mean, final scores.
But please pitch us Fish Police.
No, that was
that
a show.
Was a show.
That was a real show.
Yeah.
Sarah had 10. I had 14. And Danny is our victor with 70.
Congratulations, Danny. Do you want to play the Shits and Giggles tiebreaker?
Yeah.
It's a hot potato.
Oh.
But I don't think it's going to last too long.
Okay.
I think this is a pretty tough hot potato.
Is
but
it Pokemon characters?
It's not.
Okay.
Hot potato. Greg Lamb writes, this is for the adults only. This hot potato requires players to name competitors and announcers that are in the Laugh Olympics cartoon.
Oh, God.
There are quite a few, but only a few that you probably remember. I'm guessing, Dan, you're first.
I don't know. Jesus?
Wow. Just let me check. Gonna run down. No. That's with a J.
No. Can we stop? That's such a winning answer. Right? Jesus?
Gonna give you 33 Dave points for that one, Dan.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, you know, one for every year.
Sure.
And a fish.
Yeah. All right, Sarah.
Captain Caveman?
Yeah, Captain Caveman's there for sure.
Snagglepuss?
Snagglepuss has got to be there. Oh, wait. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Grape Ape.
Scooby-Doo? Really?
Top Cat.
Top Cat wasn't in there. Other easy ones? Other, like, probably easy gets if we had enough time? And maybe Dino Mutt, because he was in a lot. Hong Kong Phooey, everybody's favorite.
Oh, fuck, of course. Yeah.
Huckleberry Hound.
Okay. I was going to say Underdog next if it come to me.
Scooby-Doo was in it, as we've said, but also Scooby-Dumb. Uh-huh. Shaggy, of course, then was in it.
Right.
Speed Buggy.
Okay. Oh,
and did somebody say Yogi Bear?
No.
Yeah, he was in it too. All right, but
valued guess.
Valued guess.
Way to go, Danny!
Congratulations!
Yay! Yay.
Well played.
Super excited.
That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We discussed how many stars to give the third season of Black Mirror before Sarah entered the singularity that is The Blotter Presents to present Murder in the Heartland. We then went around the dial with stops at Jane the Raisin, Super Sultan, Project Yummy Fruit, and Smarty Thing. I may have changed the order of things at some point before I said Dan went all the way with his best made plans to get Degrassi's best laid plans into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week. And Dan was the winner of this week's Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Way to go, fuckfingers.
Sarah D. Bunting.
And you look like a tramp.
And Daniel McEachern.
Wait, am I fuckfingers?
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Grain.
Two stars?
Wasn't a meaningful encounter.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.